folks, and welcome to the Smart Hour. Thank you for tuning in today. This is your host, Paul Abramson, editor of creationism.org on the Internet. It is Thursday, June 7th, 2007. And today we're going to talk, I want to talk about the history of creationism, kind of the history of the creation-evolution debate. Many people don't know anything about that history as it affects people in their minds and in the history and societal changes. So I'm going to speak rather broadly, but then when we get close in the 19th and 20th century, get into more detail and give you some resources that are available on creationism.org. But I actually haven't gone through this subject before, at least I don't think kind of focused on what is the history. And even many creationists don't know the history very well. Some of them think it started in 1961 with a particular book that came out, The Genesis Flood. But actually, the debate was running, being fought very vigorously in the 1870s, 1880s, and then again coming into the 20th century, particularly the 1920s, 1930s. And then there was, on the creation side, tragically in the 1950s, a lull on the creation side, which allowed evolution to gain the upper hand in America, even though there's still no scientific evidence supporting evolution, which is one of the reasons why this program, humble though it be, is on truthradio.com, truthradio.info. Hope you share it with friends. If you like this program, please do encourage your friends to listen in or to download from the archives. There was trouble for a few days there being able to download the archives. I think it was about for a few days. This is actually a all of these programs on truthradio.com and truthradio.info are, for the most part, pretty much low budget. We're out there. We're doing these. Each program is different, but we're providing this information because we really believe that it is information you need to hear and that other people need to hear. And even if you don't agree with everything you hear on this program or on this station, well, consider them. Okay, this is part of freedom of speech. It's part of, within America, I know there's a certain number of international listeners. Within America, this is an important part of who we are in being able to express various ideas, some of which can run very strongly counter to established paradigms or established beliefs that people have. And sometimes when I've given creation talks on campus, I have told people, look, you know, you may disagree with some of my conclusions, but even if you do, consider the evidence, double-check it, double-check what I'm telling you, and then use that evidence to improve your own understanding of the world and of our ancient history and to maybe develop the next theory, the next best theory, because some of the evidence that I would discuss during an average creation talk, most evolutionists have never heard because it doesn't fit in with the theory of evolution at all. So if the person still believes evolution is true, well, okay, put this evidence in there too. And improve the theory and, you know, do that, even though my conclusions you don't like. I'll give you an example. In the 1970s, a man named Eric von Däniken wrote a book called Chariots of the Gods. It was a big seller back in the 70s. Chariots of the Gods, Eric von Däniken. He was from somewhere in Europe, northern Europe. I don't remember which country. But many of the conclusions, I would say a wide majority of people disagree with the conclusions, but he brought some interesting evidence to the table. He put together an interesting collection of evidence from around the world. So even if one disagrees with his conclusions, which I would be among those, still, I get his book. I have copies, used copies of probably most of the books he wrote because, well, he had some very interesting evidence he brought out. So it's like, what do you do with this? If it's valid evidence, if the evidence itself is valid, you can have more than one interpretation. First, you got to try to assemble the best collection of evidence if you're trying to make your theory, if you're trying to make the best theory you can, right? Okay. So let me make a couple of announcements here before we get going and I make these kind of sporadically different days. First is, in the next hour after this on truthradio.com, truthradio.info, that's T-R-U-T-H-R-A-D-I-O, the two words put together, truthradio.com or truthradio.info. The next show after this one, about an hour from now, starting about 55 minutes from now, is The Best of Dr. Kent Hovind. Dr. Kent Hovind is one of the best-known creation science speakers. His webpage is drdino.com. That's D-R-D-I-N-O, Dr. Dino, D-R-D-I-N-O.com. Organization name is Creation Science Evangelism. And that is a pre-recorded program here on truthradio.com, truthradio.info. But he gives excellent creation advice, excellent information. It's a different program from this one, but I highly recommend his programs and also his video series. Go to his webpage, drdino.com, and take a look. He has an excellent 8-DVD. It's 7 parts, but 8-DVD series. I think it's like 18 hours or something like that, and it sells for $100, which is fantastic because he gives so much information. It's thousands of PowerPoint slides. The skeptics just hate his evidence. They hate the conclusions. I've gone, actually, on one of the programs on my show a couple weeks ago, I was going out looking at some of the evidence that they, that the skeptics say, this can't be true. The salt in the oceans or Niagara Falls being made quickly or the Greenland ice cores and all these other things. And I'll tell you what, their objections, in my, to my opinion, as I look at how they object when we show, no, there's good evidence the Earth is young, and there's still zero evidence the Earth is millions or billions of years old. It can't be that old. It's ridiculous. The rivers haven't been running long enough. The Earth's spin is slowing down too quickly. Helium is accumulating in the upper atmosphere. Okay, helium, remember when you were a kid and you let go of that balloon one time? Forever after that, whenever you got that balloon, you clenched it tight like a bear trap. That's what I did. Because, you know, my balloon, there it goes. Okay, well, the helium goes up, and it's light enough that it is lighter than the oxygen, nitrogen, and other elements in the atmosphere. But it's heavy enough that it stays within the Earth's gravitational pull. So there's actually a layer of helium high above the Earth. Makes sense, right? Well, that's accumulating. So if someone wants to say in their wishful thinking, fairy tale way of thinking, the Earth is millions or billions of years old, well, we can now pretty well determine the rate that the helium is accumulating in the upper atmosphere, and the Earth is not millions or billions of years old. The helium is accumulating too quickly, and there's not enough of it up there. If someone wants to believe, again, evolution is not based on science. It is a mental hiding place from God. Many people don't realize that. They think, oh, the scientists believe that. Well, some scientists do. There's two kinds of evolutionists. The first kind of evolutionist is an honest person who honestly thinks, well, gee, that's what most people or many people think, so it must be true, and then they don't worry about it. There's another kind of evolutionist, and that's people who are hiding from God no matter what, because the alternative, the godless evolution, the alternative is that God made us, this planet has an owner, and in fact, your soul has an owner. That's very threatening on a personal level, isn't it? If someone's hiding from God, right? We'd prefer that there wasn't an owner. The natural man is sinful. The natural man doesn't want to. So there are two kinds of evolutionists. Ones who have been deceived and believe there's actually scientific evidence. There isn't. I don't know of any. At least maybe there is some, but I don't know of any. I've been studying the subject for years. And then those who are actually participating in the deception, who are trading their souls for a few bowls of porridge and a few decades of respect today, and who badly want evolution to be true, either evolution or aliens, that aliens put life on Earth, because that also would be acceptable. There's people out there paying good money, the SETI project, SETI, looking for extraterrestrial life. There's got to be life out there in the universe. The problem is there is, and we have evidence of it, but they don't want to find it, because the God of the Bible has very clearly revealed himself that he is there. We know that there are angels, right? Every society down through time, not every person, but in societies all down through time, all around the world, as far as I know, every society, there has been a belief in ghosts, or good and evil spirits, or good and evil angels, right? Everybody knows that. Not just the Christian and Muslim and Judaic beliefs, but I mean in China, in Asia, I mean, anywhere in the world, in Africa, with animism, I mean, everybody knows that there are good and evil spirits, except for modern man, because we're surrounded with so much technology that we're not seeing what's really going on and what is important, the spiritual being important, the physical being temporary. Evolution, of course, only deals with this physical. So it turns upside down the things that are most important in life, dealing with the physical universe as if that's what's important. That's the least important part of our lives, the least important. It is important. Take care of your body. You should eat well, et cetera, et cetera. But it's your soul. It's your spirit. Those are the things that live on past this time, this temporary time of learning and testing. this time on Earth now. I know I do repeat myself on different programs. That's because I think we need the repetition. I've had 9 years now, 9 or 10 years, to learn to think like a creationist. In other words, to think scientifically, and I want to encourage you to be thinking this way. Okay, to be realizing this time on Earth is not life. This time on Earth is a temporary time of learning and testing ahead of life. Life is the next phase after this time. Okay? And so whether if you accept Christ as your Savior, you will go on and live into life. If you choose not to do that or out of ignorance don't do that, then what the Bible says is that you then die in your sins. So nothing is more important than finding out who the God of creation is, why we were created, and what he expects from us in this life. So the history of the creation-evolution debate starts back in Eden, 6,000 years ago, shortly after the creation of the earth. The earth was created ex nihilo, in other words, out of nothing, God created the universe as we know it. First the earth, and then the star, then some life on Earth, the stars, moons, and planets, then plant life, and then animal life, humans, and then he rested on the seventh day. And soon afterwards, the serpent comes and tempts Eve. He says, "Is that what God said?" And it says the serpent, Genesis chapter 3, being more subtle than any beast of the field. More subtle, that's interesting, isn't it? Why is that quality important? Why is that that's the thing that's mentioned about him? I think it's because subtle can be easier for someone to be deceived. It looks okay. You're not too worried about it. Your alarms don't go up that something's wrong. And he starts questioning. You will not surely die if you eat of this fruit. For God knows that the day you eat that fruit, you will know the difference between good and evil, just like him. He mixed truth with deception. Truth with deception equals deception. It doesn't equal partial truth. It equals total deception. If you go to a used car dealer and you want to buy a car and he says, "Hey, it's only got 20,000 miles. This is real beautiful. I got to sacrifice it. I got to give it away for this price here." Okay, he may have told you some truth. Maybe it only has 20,000 miles. What he didn't tell you is that it had an accident and it rolled four times and burned out and then had to be rebuilt with all these used parts. And it looks pretty good. They got it all shined up. But it's not going to run very well for very long. So he may have told you some truth, but there's implied exception. Okay, you see that the parallel that I'm trying to make, that some truth mixed with some deception, the purpose is not to inform you, it's to trick you. Okay? And we are subject to that. And as I've mentioned a few times in the program recently, when Jesus was asked by his disciples, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, we have an account called the Olivet Discourse, when they ask him, "What will be the sign of your coming, or the sign of the end times?" Jesus answers, and the very first thing he says in all three accounts, I consider pivotally important. If that's the first thing he says, and that's recorded three times, that makes it very important. And here's what it is, Matthew 24, I don't remember the exact verse, you can look it up. The account is in three different places. The first one is in Matthew 24. Jesus says something like, "Take heed that no man deceive you." The same account is in Mark chapter 13. You know, "Take heed that no one deceives you." And when Jesus began to speak, he began by saying, "Take heed that no man deceive you." And Luke chapter 21, again the same account. And Jesus starts with the same kind of wording each of the three ways. "Take heed that no one deceives you, or that you be not deceived." And we're told several times, about a dozen times altogether in the New Testament, that many shall be deceived in the end times. They will follow false Christ. They will do these things. So if you're walking around, yes, I am talking to you, and I'm talking to me actually at the same time, because it says that St. Paul, it tells us, work out your faith with fear and trembling. I believe that, because I'll tell you what, I'm a really imperfect person, and I don't know why God has entrusted the ministry to me that I have. I need to try to do the best that I can with it, but I do it knowing how imperfect I am. And when several times it says in the New Testament, "Take heed thee not be deceived, or many will be deceived," boy, I pray to God, please don't let me be deceived. Folks, you're listening to the Smart Hour. Please stay tuned after these messages. Well, folks, welcome back to the Smart Hour. Thank you for tuning in today. Again, this is your host, Paul Abramson, editor of creationism.org. Today I'm talking about the history of the creation-evolution debate and where we've gone to so far is back to Eden, because you have a situation where you have two choices. You have two choices on what you're going to trust: God's word, what God has said, or humans' opinions, which is sometimes influenced by fallen angels, which includes Satan himself, demonic powers, and others. Doctrines of demons, it says, so there will be in the end times. And as I was talking just before the break, many shall be deceived. That's what it says. You know, I many times when I'm visiting churches, people are just sure that, oh, you can believe in evolution to be a Christian. And I understand many of these are well-meaning people. They just haven't thought about it before. They haven't thought about what does evolution mean, because we're not just conscious. We have a subconscious part of our mind. That subconscious works, and what you've got is a cognitive dissonance when you're believing two completely opposite things. And Christianity, it teaches you God is perfect. Evolution teaches you God made lots of mistakes, or he's non-existent. And if a person to try to hold those two opposite, completely contradictory thoughts in their mind at the same time causes serious problems. When Jesus answered his critics when he walked among us 2,000 years ago, how did he usually start his answer? Well, first he would ask them a question. He would ask them a question, either a clarification or where they stand, or, you know, he'd say, what did Moses write about this? Or, you know, what about this? And then he would answer, have you not read? Or he would answer, for it is written, right? He knew he could have confidence in the word. We need to know that too. By breaking creation, by breaking it, that was the first deception, and it's being used very effectively in the modern world. It started back in Eden when Satan said, you can improve yourself. You don't need to obey what God said. If you eat this, you'll know the difference between good and evil. You will be improving yourself without God's help. That's one way to just restate that, to restate what happened, right? Now, we don't know too much about the history of the 1600 years before the flood, so I'm going to fast forward from that, but what I believe probably happened, there is some evidence that the fallen angels interacted with humans in a very direct way, in some ways in very horrific ways, the Nephilim, N-E-P-H-I-L-I-M, the Nephilim, and that the sons of God, that the fallen angels, some of the fallen angels interacted even, quote-unquote, marrying the daughters of men, some of the humans. And it's referred to in Jude as kind of a bestiality. The reference equates, not equates with, but there's a reference giving a, in the same phrasing of Sodom and Gomorrah, in other words, a weird perversion, unnatural, and that God would judge very harshly. That's in the book of Jude, talking about that the angels which left their former estate. So the evidence then that these angels want to be worshipped. Evolution, of course, is just a temporary false religion. Satan wants to be worshipped. He wants to be as the Most High God. One of the things evolution does is it de-Christianizes, and we're seeing that happen all around us in churches, right? People say, oh, I can believe evolution and creation. You might. Your kids won't. They'll take the next step downward. That's what will happen. So for some people now, they're going, well, we believe in church, yeah, but your kids, it's going to ravage the souls of your kids. If it doesn't get them, it's going to get the ones after that. Because when they reach teenage years and they're evaluating, reevaluating, part of that rebellion time is reevaluating the values of their parents. And if they see hypocrisy, what you've kind of reconciled in your mind as a middle, you know, depending on how old you are, obviously people of all ages are listening to this, but your kids, teenagers, are going to look at that and say, that doesn't make any sense at all. I don't need church at all, because we know if the beginning of the Bible isn't true, the rest of it's probably not true, right? And then it's like, what, huh, no, this is a good book, and they will reject the faith. And that's happening all around us. The creation-evolution debate, it is a pivotal one. Right now we're still losing it. We're still on the losing end, because most Christians haven't realized what the battle is, what's going on, and why. Anyway, so what I want to do is jump forward to the post-flood period, particularly after Babel. Obviously at the Tower of Babel, people chose to fight against God. They decided they were going to build a tower and make it so they would make a name for themselves. God wouldn't destroy them again. God divided them by their language. This has been about Genesis chapter 11 and 12, I believe, okay? 10, 11, and 12. This is post-flood period. It's a very brief recollection given there. is also the Table of Nations given there at that time, an amazing document. Anyone who wants to research Table of Nations, let me recommend a book for you. It's free online on creationism.org. A British author, Bill Cooper, wrote After the Flood, After the Flood by Bill Cooper, C-O-O-P-E-R. Go to creationism.org/books. Look for the book After the Flood, and he discusses the Table of Nations and how accurate it is. And that we're still learning more as archaeologists continue to look at the various people groups in the world and how they go back in their ancient migrations. And, yeah, Genesis is accurate. Of course, the Bible is the accurate book of the ages, period. I like to tell people that, you know, they say, well, what do you do? Well, I teach people that the beginning of the Bible is just as literally true as the rest of the Bible. Did you have any other questions? Usually, it depends on the person. Some of them, like, they just stare at it. If I'm with skeptics or something, they'll just stare at me. Well, but that Bible isn't true at all. Yes, it is, and you're mistaken if you think it isn't. But if you think there's contradictions, please let me know, and I'll try to address those. And so, particularly in the area of creation theory, creation and the flood. We get to the Greeks. Okay, I'm jumping forward over into time. The Babylonians, the Greeks, the Chaldeans, and, you know, the Mesopotamians, and many different, kingdoms, empires, and people groups in the world. And by the time of the Greeks, it had been, say, over 1,000 years, say, probably 1,500, 2,000 years after the flood. People were forgetting. Now, the flood was still remembered. We know from Josephus, J-O-S-E-P-H-U-S, Josephus, he wrote about one generation after Christ, the way when he's defending Jewish history to a secular world, to a non-Jewish world, he's defending all these customs and the history of the Jews, and when he gets to the flood, he doesn't have to defend it. You can read it. It's online, also on creationism.org, and actually several places on the Internet. Go to creationism.org/books/B-O-O-K-S, and then you'll find Josephus in there, and we actually have hyperlinks directly to where he talks about the flood, because he doesn't have to defend it. He says everybody knows the flood happened, and then he references a few other historians and moves on. He doesn't have to defend the flood. Until about 200 or 300 years ago, folks, if you don't know this history, everybody knew that the flood happened. The question was why? Who did it? For what reasons? And why, you know, why were there survivors? Usually it's humankind had become violent, and they usually either had a raft or a boat or a canoe or some kind of enclosed vessel of some kind, and one or three or eight humans, and then a whole bunch of animals. That's what you usually had, and either landed on a mountain or on an island somewhere. You can look at the stories. Go to creationism.org/flood, F-O-O-O-D, /, and you'll find we have a complete book online by Sir James Frazier, and he says that in his, actually, he gives a quote of Catlin, a famous American painter from the 1820s, 1830s. He was visiting American Indian tribes in North, South, and Central America, and what a fantastic thing he did. He preserved images of what their environment looked like, what they looked like, and their living and stuff like that. He went around painting, and he made a very interesting observation. Here's what he says. This is almost an exact quote. If you go to creationism.org/flood/, he says, of the 120 Indian tribes that I have visited in North, South, and Central America, not a single one does not have a legend of this flood and of its hero. In other words, everybody knew. You know, some people say, oh, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Oh, the Bible copy. Now we can reject the Bible again. Because these people want to hide from God. The natural man wants to hide from God. The creation-evolution debate is not an even debate. It's not like, oh, gee, you guys are right. Well, we'll believe in creation now. No, because if you believe in creation, remember, conscious and subconscious, it makes it logical to say, well, if we're created, that means there's a creator. That means it's logical to find out who that creator is. I think I better believe in evolution. It is natural. The natural man wants to hide from God. The natural man is sinful. This is not an even debate at all. And many honest people, honest, intelligent people, many of them being God-fearing people, haven't realized. They think, well, gee, the scientists say, well, some of the scientists do say evolution is true. Some scientists say there's actually hundreds who are members of the Creation Research Society, the CRS, Creation Research Society. There's at least 600 voting member scientists, advanced degree scientists, who are members of the Creation Research Society, and their statement of belief starts with that they believe scientific evidence shows that 6 days, 6,000-year-old creation is completely scientifically viable. You've never heard that before. You better do some research, because I'll tell you what's going to happen in the last days. Many people are going to be deceived. And deception compounds upon deception. Once Satan gets you to believe evolution, then he can deceive you in other ways. Happens individually, happens corporately, happens to whole churches, happens to whole countries. Germany had been a civilized country. It was the country of Beethoven, of Martin Luther, of many philosophers and poets. They fell to believing in evolution. And by the 1930s, a political party came to power. And what were they teaching? What were they preaching? The religion of evolution. We are the most evolved people. We are the master race. That wasn't based on what the Bible said. Based on evolution. Some of those people who persecuted the Jews were people who called themselves Christians. I tell people, if you want to stand against the Jews, I've said this on the program before, if you want to stand against those Jews, the Jew who you should stand the most against, just to be consistent in your belief, because you should be consistent in your belief, right? The Jew who you should stand most against is the King of the Jews. And as long as you stand against the King of the Jews, as much or more than any of the other Jews, then at least you're being consistent in your belief. The New Testament was written by Jews. Okay? Horrifically, Christians have persecuted Jews down through the millennia, about in the last 2,000 years. But actually, that's consistent. I'll just touch on this briefly. That's consistent because in the whole Old Testament, who killed the prophets? The official Jewish leaders and the average people who sometimes stone the prophets, right? Many of them were killed by the very people who they were trying to preach to, right? And so why would we expect anything different in the New Testament era? They killed the Jews. They also killed the Reformers, the ones who wanted to bring back that the Bible is true. Many honest Bible-teaching people were... The Reformation could have happened two or three times before when it did, with Martin Luther, who's officially credited with it, but those men got burned at the stake by the official church leaders. Those official church leaders were standing against Christianity. They were standing against Judaism, right? The same as what you would have had in the Old Testament. Many of the official Jewish kings, most of the Jewish kings were horrible leaders. They were horrible. They were against the prophets. They were against the true teachings that Jehovah, that the creator of the universe had put down. Okay, I'm drifting here. Okay, the creation evolution debate. Let's move forward, since I know we're going to go to a break here pretty soon. The Greeks believed in atomistic theory, and that kind of a theory had been battered around over the millennia. People said, okay, yeah, maybe just everything kind of fell together by accident. You have atoms swerve once in a while. You had your four, the humors, you had the, everything was reduced down to four things. You had fire, water, wind, and earth, I think, were the four. And they had this all kind of, mapped out in their mind and stuff. And then once people said, then there are the gods out there, because they knew that there were fallen angels. That was true. They knew there was good and bad spirits out there, and some of them needed to be appeased or felt that they needed to be appeased. That's been true around the world, as I mentioned earlier in the program and at other times, talking about the spiritual realm is just as real. In fact, more real than the physical realm. In the room you're in right now, how many dimensions are there? Logically, is it logical to say the God of the universe has to answer to us? Is it logical to fold your arms and say, well, he hasn't proven himself to me. Does he need to? Who are you? Who am I? God needs to prove himself to us? Somebody's getting a little too big for their britches, aren't they? Right? Modern humans getting a little too big for their britches. I want to mention a funny thing here. I mentioned Germans, okay, evolutionary Nazism, evolutionary communism also killed tens of millions, if not over 100 million people when it was implemented. Communism directly predicated upon evolutionary beliefs. Karl Marx read Charles Darwin's book twice in 1 year after it came out, because he was so impressed by these teachings. It made it, if someone believed in evolution, it made it logical, it made it logical to say, well, maybe God was not needed. Now they have a foundation for atheism. Which, in the religious wars in history, there have been many religious wars. Oh, those terrible religious wars. When were the worst religious wars? The 20th century religious wars, when the atheists came to power. Because they not only killed foreign armies, but they mass murdered, they turned around and mass murdered their own people. There were no rules. Under atheism, who makes the rules? The humans and the demons. They just don't realize the demons are subtly influencing them. They don't realize that. What happens later? Millions and millions of deaths, sometimes by the tens of millions. I don't want my country destroyed like Germany, like Russia, like China. China's long civilized history. And they fell to communism, to atheistic communism, to evolution-based atheistic communism. America, us America's upstarts, we're better than these other long-established countries? I don't think so. I think we should be very careful and take heed that we not be deceived. And evolution is a deception. It's a deception that then allows other deceptions to be built upon top of it, like Nazism, like communism, like ecology. You heard some of these nutty ecologists, you know, that where they value trees more than humans? If left unchecked, where will that lead to? Just think logically. Knowing human nature, and as Scripture says, there is a way which seems right to a man, the end thereof is death. Okay? Start out with that the Bible really is true. Okay? And then if you have the ecology movement, I mean, some of these people, some of these nutty people saying they need to, we need to limit toilet paper. World leaders shouldn't travel so much because it hurts the environment. Oh, poor Mother Earth. Poor Gaia, Mother Earth. Someone has some tissue they can loan me. I'll give it back so you can use it too. I mean, we don't want to just throw tissue away once we're done with it. I mean, it might hurt Mother Earth, right? Okay, this guy on the radio, the internet radio program's gone a little too far now. But let's see. So the creation evolution debate, when Darwin, in 1859, he codified beliefs that had been around for a long time before him. They predated him. There's actually another man named Wallace. He was into Spiritism. Lyell wanted to help Darwin get your work out there first. You'll get credit for it, not Wallace, things like this. It's a long story. Folks, so we'll go from the 1859 until now in the next section. This is the Smart Hour. Thank you for tuning in. Please stay tuned after these messages. Well, folks, welcome back to the Smart Hour. Thank you for tuning in today. This is your host, Paul Abramson, editor of creationism.org. It is Thursday, June 7th, 2007. Let me make another announcement here. If you're looking for good theological teaching, I'll give you one excellent school that you should definitely check out, fill out an application. I believe it's free to do an evaluation with the school, and that's Masters International School of Divinity. It's based in southern Indiana, Masters International School of Divinity. The webpage is mdivs.edu, Masters International School of Divinity, and it is a high-quality distance learning program and actually intensive seminars. There was recently a seminar actually over a trip over archaeologically based over to Israel. And there are regular intensive seminars held in various cities around the country. I believe later this year there are seminars that are going to be, I think, in Virginia, in Alabama, Denver, Colorado, Portland, Oregon. I think there's several different ones set up. And either whether a person's looking for good teaching on an undergraduate or graduate or doctoral level, Masters International School of Divinity is an excellent one to take a look at. And the webpage again is mdivs.edu. mdivs.edu. Okay? So today we are talking about the history of the creation evolution debate. I'm just trying to give you a brief overview. So 1859, Darwin publishes the book. The first edition sells out immediately. This is great. This is wonderful. One area of research that hasn't been done yet that I'd really like to do is I want to know, because Darwin's book, Origin of Species, was a racist book because it talked about favored races, which he considered among humans that some people were more evolved than others. And so it was very much pro-white and anti-everyone else. When evolution was believed in the late 19th century, that was the worst times of atrocities against American Indians. It was the worst time in Australia. in Tasmania. And I wonder if it had an effect on the U.S. Civil War. 1859 was when that book came out. 1861 was when the Civil War broke out. Did it help to foment a distinguishing to people? Is there an intrinsic value to human beings or not? The U.S. Constitution says that we have unalienable rights. We are created in the image of God. Okay, those things are just simply taught. That's part of it. But, and all men are created equal. Now, obviously, America is very imperfect. Find me a better country anytime in the world, anywhere on any continent, okay? That's what I would say is, oh, America is hypocritical? Okay, find me one that's less hypocritical. I'll wait. Go ahead. The only ones that come up with are these imaginary ones. I heard this one guy one time talking about this. Oh, this ancient civilization, it was run by women, and it was 10,000 years ago. I don't know. That was in Berkeley, okay? And he had been going to these feminist classes. I said, well, what's the evidence for this past civilization? And he had something, and I said, well, okay, if originally women were in charge, and that's the natural state of things, and it's been 8 or 10,000 years since the last time that happened, how come they still haven't recovered yet from what that one event that happened thousands of years ago? Or did that event not happen? They just wish it had happened. You're believing a false history. Anyway, that really confused him because I said, well, you know, real history, let's go back to the Assyrians, let's go back to the Hittites, the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, the ancient Egyptians, let's look at the hieroglyphics in the pyramids. Anyway, so, okay, that's just one thread, okay? I like to, it is good to challenge. It is good to be skeptical in a positive way. We don't want to believe just anything. I don't want to believe evolution if it's not true. And since it isn't true, I want to think logically, think scientifically. Yesterday I briefly talked about an article that the T-Rex was actually a slow creature. And I thought that was the funniest article. Because you can tell almost nothing from just the skeleton. But yet even some people calling themselves scientists are believing this stuff. If you had a skeleton of a sloth, would you know that it was a slow creature? And you'd never seen it alive. If you had a skeleton of a Tasmanian devil, would you know that this is something that is ready to attack? Of course not. It's ridiculous. One example I usually use is if I have a skeleton of a wolf on one side of me and a Labrador retriever on the other side of me, the skeletons look the same, right? You can't tell much about creatures. You can't even tell their diet by the skeleton. Evolutionists believe you can. But, of course, they believe they're millions of years old also, and so... Anyway, okay. I'm ready to debate. And you get, if you know any science teachers, science professors out there, it's just a public debate. I ask that we videotape it, and I just ask for equal time. I promise not to be too mean, but I will point out, keep bringing us back to science, logic, history, and common sense. Won't need to quote the Bible. If there are people there who want to use the Bible, then I will use the Bible to show them wrong also. If they want to try to say, well, gee, maybe God is weak, or non-existent, and you know, we make the rules after all, and there are no absolutes. Well, the Bible's pretty darn clear that, you know, he actually put these 10 suggestions. Oh, wait, they weren't suggestions, were they? You know, 10 commandments, that's what they were called. Okay, right? I mean, okay, let's get back to the subject here. So, shortly after Darwin published this, it had a horrible effect on non-white people in the world. Not that that wasn't happening before then, but it gave, it took someone who had a knife and gave him a gun, okay? It mentally, on a mental level, empowered people that, yeah, hey, we are more evolved, yeah, and they deserve this, we need to take care of them, the white man's burden, that kind of a way of thinking, okay, if you've heard that term. So, it led to even worse abuses in many places in the world, okay? So in the 1870s, 1880s, there was a pivotal creationist organization came out of England, the Victoria Institute. The Victoria Institute is the name of it. I actually have on creationism.org a whole section. I've got about 10 or 12 of their long articles, an article being, say, between 8 to 40 pages, something like that, on a particular topic. I don't know why no one else has gleaned from these, but I've actually scanned in a whole bunch of their articles because they have interesting things to say. Creation evidences, creation science stands the test of time. We can use those things from 1870s, 1880s, and they hold up just fine. evolutionists, they have to keep revising their belief system based on current consensus, you know, blowing with every doctrine, every wind of doctrine, they blow back and forth. Now we think the T-Rex ran around slowly. Now we think that he roared with a lisp. Now we think that maybe he really liked carrots and tapioca pudding. Okay, whatever crazy things they come up with based on just the skeletons and a few footprints and stuff. But actually what they should be doing is looking at dragon legends, because dragons and dinosaurs are the same kind of creature. Of course humans saw dinosaurs. The Earth isn't millions of years old. You have dragon legends everywhere. China, Thailand, Vietnam, Russia, Germany, Hungary, England, ancient Romans, American Indians, several places, in Africa. There's actually evidence that some dinosaurs are still alive. Mokili Mbembe in an area in Africa in the Congo. If you show, there's native pygmy people who live, the Congo is huge, it's just massive, bigger than the state of Florida, okay, if you can imagine. It's a swamp that is that big, bigger than the state of Florida, and it's one swamp. The pygmies in that area, if you show them outlines of a bear, they've never seen it before. An eagle, they've never seen it before. A giraffe, they've never seen it before. Some of them might have seen a giraffe before or heard about it. If you show them an outline of a brachiosaurus, they go, oh, Mokili Mbembe, because they've seen that. There is evidence that dinosaurs alive today. Okay, maybe I'll talk about that in one of the programs. Evolutionists can laugh. Go ahead and laugh if you want. I'm going to base my theory on the real scientific evidence, which includes science, logic, history, and common sense. And in history, people saw dinosaurs. The old word was dragon, the new word is dinosaur. The word dinosaur was invented in the 1840s. You have too many dinosaur or dragon legends to ignore them. Okay, so going around 1900, you had a few interesting creation authors. One of them was Price. I have at least one of his books online called The Predicament of Evolution from the 1920s. Very good book. I've also got one from 1925, I think it is. T.T. Martin, I quoted from him. This is a couple months ago. I actually spent one program talking about these books that we have online from the 1920s. Excellent creation evidences. T.T. Martin's book is called Hell and the High Schools. Points out that these evolutionists like to run away from debates because they're scared chickens, right? And they don't want to debate the theory. They just want to be believed. Many evolutionists, teachers, are selling their souls for a few bowls of porridge and a few decades of respect today. They're deceiving people by the millions. They're selling their souls. Stupid thing to do, folks. This time on earth is not life. It is preparation for life. Take heed that you not be deceived. We each need to do that. Evolution is a deception which leads to other things. Belief in evolution led to Nazism. Belief in evolution led to communism. Belief in evolution is leading to wacko left-wing environmentalism. Oh, global warming. When there's still no evidence for global warming, take a look. There's a very good video called The Great Global Warming Swindle. But I'll tell you what, get The Great Global Warming Swindle. It's out of England. Excellent video. I watched it just a few weeks ago. Also, do a search. Go on Google or Yahoo or Lycos or one of the other major search engines and do a search on Global Warming New Ice Age. Okay, five words. Global Warming New Ice Age. It was someday when you're depressed and you want something funny, to cheer you up, type in Global Warming New Ice Age, and you will find people who are serious, saying global warming may lead to a new ice age. Okay, this is what they'll say. Like, so if the ice cream is melting, I put it in the oven, global warming leads to a new ice age. Anyway, so they have their beliefs about this. Let me mention another book. We only have a couple minutes left here on the show. In the Minds of Men, this is also on creationism.org, it is free to download. Mr. Ian Taylor kindly gave me permission to put this book online. Go to creationism.org/books. This is about a 550-page book. It's a very big book. I had the privilege of scanning it in and formatting it a few years ago. It took a very long time, but it's an important book, and he kindly gave me permission to put the whole thing online. In the Minds of Men, Darwin and the New World Order. In the Minds of Men. Darwin and the New World Order by Ian T. Taylor, 5th edition, copyright 2003. This is available to be downloaded and used for educational purposes. Please use it. Much of this book is about the history of the creation-evolution debate, particularly in modern times, in the minds of men, or as people conceive it, as people understand it. I mentioned 1920s. Going into 1930s, you had Shattuck. He actually published a whole series of booklets. There were a whole bunch of creation authors. some of whom I still haven't found, and other people have kind of forgotten. I'm looking for them. If you know of any from the 20s, 30s I don't know about, take a look on creationism.org. Please clue me in about them. Tell me, I'll try and buy their materials and put them online if copyright, if it's possible to do, if it is legal to do. Going into the 40s, you still had Price. Price wrote a couple of excellent books on geology, which I have, if I turn around here, Common Sense Geology by Price. And you, how that book, You Were the Creator? What is that about? Hold on just a moment, let me get this in hand. I couldn't see the first word. If You Were the Creator by George McCready Price. I haven't scanned that in. It might be from the 30s or 40s. I'm not sure if the copyright's expired on it. But, let's see here. 1942, that's pretty recent. Anyway, so going into the 40s, you had active creation authors. Unfortunately, there was a lull in the 1950s. I don't know why. I'm thinking someone fell down the job. They were called. God called them, and they didn't do it. I don't know who. I'll meet them someday, if that's the case. But in 1961, Dr. Henry Morris, and Dr. John Whitcomb wrote a pivotal book called The Genesis Flood. I think it was 1961. The Genesis Flood. And many people in the modern creation movement date the beginning of the modern creation movement to that book. Also, at the same time, there's another man who's not, maybe not as well known, but just as pivotal, and that's Reverend Walter Lang. I actually have a section on him, on Reverend Walter Lang, creationism.org, /Lang, L-A-N-G, /. I actually have a couple of his books online, several articles, and some of his audio talks in MP3 format are online and available to be downloaded. Reverend Walter Lang, he traveled all across the U.S. He started the original Bible Science Association. He was the first one to come out with a regular newsletter in America on creation. Folks, we're out of time today. I hope this has given you at least a little bit of a background in history and creation of Lucifer. There's a lot of things that could be said. It goes back to Eden. God is the soul, God's word, God's word. God bless you, Lord.